I want to first thank all of the organizers for putting this together. I've known some of you for many years and have just met some of you tonight, but thank you very much for gathering all these people together and pushing forward the idea of campaigning against the wall. It's wonderful to see everyone here, and Ramadan Kareem to those of you who are celebrating that. I spent 2 years about a decade ago living and working in Ramallah in the West Bank. And I worked with Al-Haq, a Palestinian human rights organization, and I worked there as a human rights lawyer. And we documented human rights abuses perpetrated by the Israeli occupation forces, and we analyzed those human rights violations and we wrote about them. We also analyzed international law to say that these were international human rights law violations. We worked closely with B'Tselem, which is an Israeli human rights organization. We worked with international human rights organizations. And our documentation was used by such groups as the US State Department in its country reports. Not that that's done much good these days, but. How many people here have been to Israel or Palestine? And how many people do work here on Israel-Palestine? I've also returned to the West Bank and Gaza Strip many times since 1993. And the last two times that I went, I was working with the International Solidarity Movement to end the occupation, which is a Palestinian-led, non-violent, direct action against occupation group movement. Their table is over there. ISM Vancouver is over there. How many of you have worked with the ISM? In Palestine. Put your hands way up high there. Thank you. Talk to these folks if you're interested in going. Hi, Maxine. In the United States, I volunteer with the Palestine Solidarity Committee in Seattle. We've also become the ISM chapter in Seattle. And just recently, we're working in the United States to try to have a national network, and for a while we were calling ourselves ISM North America because we were working with some Canadian ISM groups, but gradually we've realized that we have different work to do with different governments, and so we were searching around for a new name for our ISM United States network, and we finally decided on ISM US, but we did consider the term ISM Bob, Belly of the Beast. I'm out on bail from my first time working with the ISM in 2001. That's where I spent my honeymoon, in Israeli prison. In Seattle, we do things like give talks called Palestine for Beginners. We do street theater. We organize demonstrations. We have film festivals. We do all the sorts of good things that I'm sure you do here, working with a more difficult government. And I just want to offer condolences to people who are sad for the passing of President Yasser Arafat, people who considered themselves part of his community. He definitely spent his life fighting to recognize the Palestinian people and fighting for their self-determination. He may not always have done it wisely, but he certainly did not cause the Israeli occupation and certainly didn't perpetuate it. In fact, if Israel wanted to, it could remove all of its settlers tomorrow and remove its army the day after tomorrow, and the occupation would end. Doesn't need a negotiating partner to end an occupation. Okay, I'm going to talk about the Israeli wall. And as Erica read in her greetings from Palestine, Palestinians are calling that. Does anyone have any advice as to how to not make the stuff up? Back off. Okay. People are always telling me that. Back off. Okay. Okay, but you can still hear me if I talk from here? Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. So many people. Am I too far or too close? Okay. Just wave at me if I get too close or too far away. So the Israeli wall is being called the third Nakba, and I cannot talk about Palestine without putting things in context. I just cannot, because there may be, most of you may know all of this, but there are a few people here who don't, and I must put it in context. I'll try to be brief, but I must say it. The first Nakba was from 1947 till 1949, when a Zionist national independence movement took 78% of historic Palestine in a war and destroyed more than 400 Palestinian villages and drove out three-quarters of the Palestinian population, 750,000 people, many of whom still have the keys to their homes and still have the deeds to their land and are waiting to return in refugee camps or in places outside of Israel and the occupied territories, and they have a right to return under international law. And it's being done in many places. Refugees return all the time to other places. The second Nakba was in 1967 when the State of Israel occupied the rest of historic Palestine, 22% of it. They occupied the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. They occupied East Jerusalem, which is part of the West Bank. They annexed East Jerusalem, which is totally illegal under international law. And they kept the rest of the West Bank and Gaza Strip under military occupation, where today, to this day, 3.5 million Palestinians live, and they are not allowed to be citizens of anywhere. And that's the problem. They're under occupation. They don't have a state. They can't vote. They can't decide anything democratically. In fact, if they have elections to elect a successor to Yasser Arafat, I will be very interested to see whether they can be free and fair elections, since Israel is occupying the entire West Bank and Gaza Strip and will decide who can pass to get to the voting booths based on where the roadblocks and the checkpoints are. The roadblocks and the checkpoints are already there. It's just a question of which ones will be open and which will be closed that day. Since 1967, Israel has imported about 500,000 Israeli citizens to become settlers in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. These people live under a different set of laws than their Palestinian neighbors right next door in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and that's why people call this apartheid. Two groups of people living side by side under two different kinds of laws based on what their ethnicity is. That's apartheid. These settlers are living in settlements which have been built on confiscated Palestinian land. About 40% of the West Bank and Gaza Strip have been confiscated for these settlements. They also drive on Jewish-only roads, and they use, although they're only about 20% of the population in the occupied territories, they use over 80% of the water. At the same time, the Palestinians living right next door to them have been subjected to various collective punishments while living under martial law. Besides land confiscation, which I talked about with the settlers and I'll talk about again with the wall, they're subjected to arbitrary detention without charge or trial. Israel does everything by law, and these particular laws are based on British mandate law, so Israel's certainly not the only country that uses these laws, and the United States is using them quite effectively right now, both inside and outside the territorial U.S. Palestinians are also subjected to torture, open fire regulations that allow soldiers to fire on unarmed crowds. They're subjected to house demolitions. Over 10,000 homes have been demolished. Rachel Corey, an international activist with the ISM, was run over by a bulldozer twice, driven by an Israeli soldier, and she was trying to protect a house from being demolished. Palestinians are subjected to curfews, checkpoints, roadblocks, arbitrary closure of borders, and a permit system, all of which have added up to an economic strangulation that have left 60 to 80% of Palestinians unemployed, two-thirds living under the poverty line, 1 in 5 children malnourished, and it's a humanitarian crisis, as declared by the UN a couple of years ago. The restrictions have not only impinged on the economy, but they also have impinged on education, the freedom of worship, ability to have health, unification of the family, and the life of the Palestinian culture and society. Both collective punishment and settlements are against international law. Under the Fourth Geneva Convention, you're not allowed to transfer your population into an occupied territory, and you're not allowed to impose collective punishments. All of this has been happening since the second Nakba started in 1967. There's been an increase in the physical harm and numbers of people imprisoned since the Palestinians first rose up against the occupation in 1987. There's been an increase in the rate of settlements since 1993, when the Oslo Accords were signed by Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin. There have been major border closures since 1993. there's been an increase in killings of Palestinians since the second Intifada began, the second uprising in 2000. And Palestinians rose up in 2000 because they realized that the Oslo Accords signed in 1993 were not going to gain them self-determination. They realized that settlements were increasing rather than decreasing, so they were losing land. They realized that the negotiations going on between Barak and Arafat were not going to gain them a state. Contrary to myth, Barak did not offer anything generous. He didn't really make an offer, and what we can piece together from what he was possibly offering was that he was offering about 60% of his the West Bank and Gaza Strip in several different non-contiguous areas. Not a generous offer. There's a map up here that can show you what we think he was offering. If you have doubts about that, Palestinians went on to negotiate with Israelis later that year and into the next year. So this myth that after Barak made his generous offer and Arafat refused, that there was no one to negotiate with, is just that. It's a myth. Palestinians and Israelis continued to negotiate. They got closer to agreement, and then Barak withdrew in order to go into elections, which he lost. And Ariel Sharon has not shown any sign of wishing to negotiate. In fact, he made a visit to a very holy site in East Jerusalem with 1,000 soldiers, left the soldiers there, said to the newspapers that he was visiting there because he believed East Jerusalem should never be returned to the Palestinians, and that is when the Palestinians began their second uprising. So what I've described is not only an occupation that is illegal according to the Fourth Geneva Convention because it hasn't ended as soon as it could. The Fourth Geneva Convention says you can't acquire territory by force. So if you're going to occupy something in war, get out, deoccupy, withdraw as soon as possible. So this occupation is illegal because it's gone on for too long and because so many of the practices of the occupation are illegal, as I've just said. The third Nakba is the wall. And I'm going to go through the basic facts about the wall, which many of you know. Most of these facts appeared in this detail in the International Court of Justice decision. The ICJ didn't deal much in platitudes. It dealt with very, very specific facts. The wall has been considered openly since 1996, and they began to build it in April 2002 after the Israeli cabinet approved it. Its very sinuous route shows that it is trying to annex as much land that settlements are built on as possible. And so really it is de facto annexation, and this is what the ICJ opinion has called it. It puts about 80% of the settlements on the Israeli side of the wall. Only 11% of the wall is on the green line, is on the old Israeli-Jordanian armistice border of 1949. The rest of it cuts into West Bank territory. There's a myth out there that the wall is to protect Israel's security. How can that be when the wall is dividing Palestinians from Palestinians, not dividing Palestinians from Israelis? The wall cuts through neighborhoods. It cuts through Palestinian villages. It divides one Palestinian brother's home from another Palestinian brother's home. It is, I'm going to say some of these in English, in American feet, I'm sorry, feet and miles. I'll try to go to kilometers when I can. It's 26 feet high, and people who've seen the Berlin Wall remark on how it's twice as high as the Berlin Wall. It has cost $3.4 billion. The United States gives $3 to $5 billion a year to Israel, so perhaps that sounded cheap to Israel. It is 700 kilometers long, 360 kilometers long on the east side and 340 kilometers long on the west side. It's the west side that is that has been built. Most of it has been built already, but the east side is also proposed and, as far as we know, is going to happen.